Can't you see it? The world running on EVs and renewable energy? Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Dr. John Fleming, Louisiana State Treasurer, to talk about recent decisions made by a number of banks relative to the Net Zero Banking Alliance, which is a United Nations-backed coalition of banks. Dr. Fleming, welcome to the show.
Well, hey, Neil. Great to be back with you again.
Happy New Year to you. Recent decisions made by Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo leaving the Net Zero Banking Alliance. What is this emblematic of, and why do we see a number of these big banking operations around the world withdrawing from the alliance?
Yeah, well, as you said, this all began with the UN over in Europe. This was all started. At its peak, there were 140 banks, and their commitment has been to end use of fossil fuels and no carbon emissions by the year 2050. And we all see how impractical that's going to be. We don't have the science and don't expect the science to make that possible, nor is it actually necessary. But also, the consumers out there are pushing back against this. They see the problems we have with windmills, solar technology, electric vehicles. And there's a lot of pushback occurring now, both in government and also in the finance industry. As you know, I push back against ESG, the debanking of companies that are in the oil and gas industry. And I think we're starting to get through to these companies because one by one, they're sort of quietly backing away. Bank of America has made it a point to meet with me next week, and I look forward to discussing these things with them as well.
You know, I don't believe in coincidences. Obviously, President-elect Trump comes into office on January 20th, and one, you know, the cornerstone of his platform has been drill, baby, drill. The industry itself is drilling more than ever before, not because of any assistance by the Biden administration. In fact, to the contrary, he's been more limiting and just recently issued yet another executive order relative to drilling in a number of bodies of water. Is this really all about, trying to align themselves with the present president? I mean, it seems as though it took off when Biden was elected, and now it seems to be waning as President Trump enters the stage.
I really do believe this has a lot to do with it. I think there's a tectonic shift in politics and in policy as a result of the overwhelming victory that President Trump had. He had both a popular win as well as taking all of the swing states. And it really means that he has a mandate now from the people. I mean, you look at the fires that are going on in Los Angeles. This is an example of poor oversight in government work for the people. And they're desperate for someone who has real solutions to our problems, both at the border, but also when it comes to drilling or oil and gas and many other things. And so I think President Trump is the embodiment of how there is a huge deflection in history ongoing right before our very eyes.
You know, it's interesting. I think you've been a supporter of all of the above, you know, energy, but not to the exclusion of one or the other, right? I mean, and being punitive in that approach. And it seems to me that they tried this being punitive, and the public just simply is not buying it. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you're right. I am an all of the above guy. If you look in those few rare instances where solar, like in the desert, has something to offer, I'm all for it. I just don't think taxpayers should be subsidizing. And so wherever a certain type of energy is reliable, and useful and cost-effective. Hydroelectric, nuclear, really, we're going to need all of these technologies, but we can't just simply end the emission of carbon dioxide, nor do we need to. It's just there's really no need for that. That's really a cult sort of viewpoint. And look, our energy needs are going to double just in the next few years as all of these data centers come online. We've got one or two, I think, set up to come into Louisiana, and they're going to have to find grid power someplace.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting how we address those challenges. Your thoughts, I mean, I'm struggling right now with understanding a little bit about what the authority that we give the executive branch of government, meaning the president, as a lame duck. And you are a former member of Congress in issuing some of these executive orders that seem to, at least thus far in court, have to have some permanency and trying to beat that back. I'm wondering whether or not we should restrict lame duck presidents from really issuing a lot of this. And some of this, I think, has been actually retaliatory in nature. It's not in the best interest of the country, and it's not what the country voted for. How do we deal with that?
Well, you know, I was also deputy chief of staff in the White House under Trump during his first term, and that's during the pandemic period. And I processed for the president a number of emergency rules. So it's very useful that a president be able to do that. But the silver lining here is if executive rules are passed in the last 6 months of the presidency, the following president, the succeeding president, can reverse those. He has to go through several steps. But these terrible rules, like you're saying, the offshore drilling ban, both the Atlantic and the Pacific, Trump has already vowed that he's going to stop that. And I think it will be stopped before it even gets started. And so there is a mechanism in place where a president, in essence, can't screw his successor by doing something crazy in the last 6 months of the administration.
But you recall all the special interest groups are going to run to court, right? We do this all the time, and we get bogged down, and it just kind of delays, and it seems as though this delay tactic is becoming more and more prevalent.
Right. And really the hidden truth in all of that is the technique that's worked on these special interests is they plant insiders inside the huge bureaucracy in Washington. So what they can't pass through Congress, what happens is the administration in these bureaucracies, they invite lawsuits, and then they have a settlement of the lawsuit, which means that the outside groups really get their way because of people inside the government that are actually cooperating with them. We need to stop those practices. That's really unfair. It takes away the power of the people in Congress itself. Many of these very, very draconian limitations and regulations that, for instance, Biden has put into place and these settlement agreements have occurred without Congress having any word at all in.
It seems to me, too, this is an opportunity. You know, like I said before, I don't believe in coincidences. These banks are going to go where they can make money. And as they looked upon the Biden administration, they saw that there were going to be more and more restrictions. And obviously, that's not going to be the landscape or the climate under the Trump administration. How much of this is all about making money?
Well, that's really what's concerning, Neil, is why do banks go into ESG and brokerages like BlackRock go into ESG and do things that really is going to lower their rate of return and also increase risk. And what I think is happening now is they're realizing, because if you look at studies, the comparison between ESG funds, environmental, social, and governance funds as a priority rather than return on investment, you find that they're not performing well. And I think that the people are beginning to catch on to this. And so ultimately, these banks and financial institutions know that if they're going to compete in the marketplace, and they're going to get our business, because again, I determine a lot of the bank activity that happens in our state, they are understanding that it's all about return on investment and safety of investment. And I think they're slow to come around, but I do believe they're beginning to come around, as evidenced by what you're talking about in the Nets and Royal Alliance.
Yeah, I mean, because what happens is we get a lot of foreign investors that are willing to come in and put their money down to finance this fossil fuel industry, right? In fact, my next guest, we're talking about this with the coal industry. I mean, it's amazing how we were promised by John Kerry and others that, you know, those in Asia and otherwise were going to be more restrictive in the utilization of coal. It's not true. It's not happening.
Absolutely. In fact, I was down at one of the ports below New Orleans a couple of months ago, and we were doing a flyover in a helicopter. And I looked down there, and I saw a big barge full of coal. And I asked, where did this come from? They said, Illinois. I said, where is it going? Oh, it's going to foreign countries where they burn coal. We can't do it here. So the point being, what good is it to restrict coal and even oil and gas when other countries are putting it into the air, such as China and India?
Yeah, two of the biggest violators of the Paris Climate Accords. It's kind of this backward way of thinking that we have here as it relates to our foreign policy, especially on climate. I used to think other areas was bad, and then where we stand in climate right now is just completely mystifies me as to why we think this is working out for this country or the world in general.
But, well, as you know, the United States is not part of the Paris Accord yet. Through natural gas and fracking, we are actually achieving all the gains and goals through lower carbon emissions that come from that. But on the other hand, those who are in the Paris Accord are actually not performing, and they're actually using the very substances like coal, the dirtiest form. And so, really, the whole thing is a shame.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where this ends up, and obviously how much pushback the incoming administration is going to have on some of their initiatives. As always, we truly appreciate your time, Dr. Fleming, Louisiana State Treasurer, and your insight. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Great. Thanks, Neil. Appreciate it so much.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. When we come back, we'll visit with Diana Furchcott-Roth. She is the Director of Center for Energy, Climate, and Environment at the Heritage Foundation. And we'll talk about this billionaire mining magnate, 76-year-old Lo Tuck Kwong, ignoring all of what everyone was saying about coal. And now we are producing more metric tons of coal and burning more metric tons of coal than we did back in 2013, contrary to everything we were told about the future of coal. He doubled down. And wait till you hear the amount of money that he's making and how much wealth he's created in a very short period of time. We'll be right back.